Hi, this is Tony Robbins. Welcome to another edition of Power Talk. In this issue, we're going to approach Power Talk from a different perspective. I'm going to actually have you listen in on a live event I did before, I think it was 18,000 people in Seattle, Washington. And the focus here is, how do you create the extraordinary quality of life? That's the issue in every Power Talk. How do we take things to the next level? And in this particular talk, I was dealing with a group of people that were looking for a quick answer. And when I was looking at this quick answer, I tried to explain to them that the ultimate answer to an extraordinary quality of life is really understanding that the people who have what they want in their life are not people who don't have tragedies or don't have pain. It's the people that have learned to control the meaning of what's happened in their life. You know, so often my original teacher, Jim Rohn, taught me that it's not what happens in our lives, but it's what we do with it that changes our lives. Well, what we do with something, what action we take or fail to take, is based on the meaning we attach to something. Most of us live our lives such that if something happens outside of our control, something significant at least, very often we think that's a reason why we can't have what we deserve. We live in a world that has taught us to be in control of so much that when we feel out of control at any moment in time of events or situations, very often we lose the very power that could cause us to achieve what we really want, which is the mastery of meaning, or another way of describing it is the mastery of our own psychology. And what I'm going to talk about in this issue are the standards that separate people's lives. You know, I've had the great privilege of working with some of the greatest achievers in politics, in business, in sports, in entertainment, throughout the world over these last 25 years. And in doing so, I've noticed that there is a pattern that the greats have. I don't care if it's the Michael Jordans or if it's the Tiger Woods or the Oprah Winfreys or the Bill Gates of the world. Whether you like somebody or not, the people that are the best in the world have certain things that they approach life with differently than the average person. And they aren't huge differences, but they're the differences that make the difference. So listen and enjoy, and I'll come back on at the end and share with you just a real simple set of changes you could make, an assignment or two to move yourself forward. Because the idea of these Power Talks is not just to give you more understanding, but every time we hear an idea, maybe languaged a little different way, or maybe we're in a different emotional state, we have a chance to move ourselves forward if we take some form of action. So at the end of the tape, be sure to stick with me and I'll give you an assignment to move yourself forward and get that additional level of quality in your life that you truly deserve. So please join me now live in Seattle, Washington for our mega event on what creates an extraordinary life. What creates an extraordinary quality of life? Does money do it? Do you know people have lots of money are still not fulfilled, yes or no? Absolutely, people have tons of money that kill themselves. Does having a great relationship guarantee you'll be happy, yes or no? Can somebody love you and you still not feel love because you don't love yourself? Absolutely. Does having a great job guarantee a great quality of life? No. Does living in a great city guarantee a great quality of life? Absolutely not. The only thing that guarantees a great quality of life is a great psychology. A great mindset, because here's life. We can't control the events, right? But we can control what they mean to us. And that's where all of life is controlled and shaped for the better or for the worse. How you feel right now today, whether you feel depressed, excited, happy, whether you're looking at me going, who is this idiot with these big teeth? I've seen him sometime between the spray-on hair and the haircut thing. I know he's in there somewhere. You know, when are we going to get the next speaker? Whether that's your belief or you're saying, well, this is interesting, or whether you're saying, I have to go to the bath, whatever you're saying in your head. All of that is coming from your psychology, your mindset, your beliefs and values. And the problem is most of us did not consciously define what it is we wanted to believe. We picked up all the stuff along the way. And what's happened is it now controls us. It's the prism which our entire life is filtered through. And so what we want to maybe do today is start to look at what some of those are that empower us so we can use more of that. And maybe look at some of the things we know disempower us, but we haven't really changed, and maybe make some real decisions today. Because the meaning is everything. I mean, I see people all the time who are depressed and they got everything on earth to be happy about. I coach people and I have a group of people that I've coached for many years now who pay me $1 million a year to coach them. And I don't tell that to impress you. I tell you to impress upon you that they perceive great value. It's not about positive thinking or pumping them up. What they want is strategy. For example, one man made $500 million in one day in the stock market. He's a top financial trader in the world, one of them. And then he lost money for 3 years. So we tried everything, and then Pat Riley, who's a friend of mine, said, you got to work with Tony. It's not positive thinking. He'll turn you around. And I did from day one. But I got to tell you, when I came to see this man, here's a guy that's a multi-billionaire, made $500 million in a day. Now, you can't live on that, but it's a good start. And he's depressed, frustrated, overwhelmed, hurt, sad. And then you find somebody else who, I met a man recently, I received an award, and he came up to get an award right after me at this particular function, and I didn't understand what the award was for until afterwards. The award is because they said they ran 100 meters in less than 12 seconds, and I thought, well, that's faster than me, but that's not that fast, right? But then I found out that he has no legs. He's running and walking on artificial legs. And this guy is one of the happiest people you meet in your lifetime. You know, I went to a health spa recently, and I was sitting there in the jacuzzi with a bunch of people, and there was one lady there who was like the life of the party, and I love to find out people's psychology because I'm learning from everyone all the time. The greatest gift we have is each other. And so I asked her, I said, you seem such a happy person. Why are you so happy? She says, because every day of my life's a gift. And I said, what made you decide to come to the spa? She said, because I have a brain tumor. I said, what? She said, I have a brain tumor. They tell me I'm going to die in the next 6 to 8 weeks. And she said, so I came here not just to get fit, but to do everything I could to make myself healthy. I said, I would never know it in a million years. She goes, don't worry, I'm not in denial. She said, I just figured, what good does it do to indulge? I can't control how long I'm going to live. All I can do is influence it. And I'm going to do everything I can to influence for the better. She says, and it's not how long you live, it's how you live. And I thought, man, I'm sitting across this woman who's such an inspiration, okay? Whether you're happy or sad, whether you're excited or not, has nothing to do with your life, my friends. It has everything to do with the meaning you're attaching to your life. So let me tell you how you change the meaning. Two ways that you control the meaning, fast and rapidly. Number one is the way you use your body, as I mentioned earlier. And I want to say this again because I want you to get, you can't just get this as a thought in your head. You got to make this a habit in your body. Like, how do you build a muscle? I used to think if you exercise, you build muscle. That's not true. When you exercise, you maintain muscle. If you don't exercise, you lose muscle. The average American gains 1 pound of fat per year and loses 1 pound of muscle. So very often their weight stays stable, but the actual physical fitness of their body is going down every single year. The point of the matter is, you got to exercise just to stay even, to build muscle. Like if I want to build my bicep, what I got to do is I got to lift weights that are incredibly difficult. To build muscle, you have to push through what it seems like incredible resistance. You have to push through what is uncomfortable to get growth. And unless you do something that's uncomfortable, you're not going to grow. But what's really wonderful is if you do curls, let's say, with a weight, and I pick a really heavy weight, let's say I'm going to do 10 curls. Which one of those 10 curls do I want to do the least out of those 10? Which one? Number 10. Which one gives you all the growth? No, number 11. That's right, because it's the people who do more than it's expected always get all the rewards. It's when you just hate to do it and you make yourself do it, bam! And by demand, your muscles get stronger, and now what used to be hard to do gets easy. Now, why is that important? Because it's true of emotional muscles. Faith unused dwindles. Passion that is not engaged does not get stronger. It wanes. Love that you don't embrace does not grow. It dies. And what you have to do, though, is love, have faith, embrace those things in your life when you don't want to do it. That's when you build the muscle that makes it so you can handle anything in life. Because I got news for you. You're going to leave here today, and you're going to go out and deal with all kinds of stuff in the next weeks, months, and years, and you're going to deal with a lot of horrible things in your life. So let's be real. You're going to. But the difference is, people say, God, I wish it was so much easier. No, don't wish it was easier. Wish you were better. And don't wish. Do something to make yourself better so when the thing happens, you can handle it. I can tell you honestly and sincerely, my heart and soul, that I've been through so many things in my life that were so unbelievably painful. But instead of just thinking this too shall pass, what I think is this will make me more. Because by finding a way through this, around it, over it, by finding a way to use this unbelievable problem or challenge, then what happens for me is my muscles get so strong, my emotional, my spiritual, my psychological muscles. So next time something happens, it's not that I don't feel it, it's just like, wham, and they go, wow, how is he so strong and positive and stuff? Well, it's because I've conditioned myself by breaking through it. I'll give you an example. Years ago, I was like, I don't know, 24 years old, 25, very early in my career. I remember I did a seminar in Boston, in downtown Boston, and I finished the thing about midnight, and I went for a walk just to kind of let go, and I was walking through Copley Square. How many have been there? Know what I'm talking about. If you've not been there, it's a really amazingly historic spot because our society began there. And you've got buildings that have been around since before the U.S. was the United States, and you've got modern buildings right next to it. It's really an amazing place. So I'm walking through and kind of absorbing the history and feeling grateful to God for what I get to do for a living here at this young age, and just really, really happy and fulfilled. And in the distance, there's nobody in the streets. It's after midnight. In the distance, I see this figure kind of wandering back and forth between the gutter and the sidewalk. And the guy's kind of staggering. And so as I get closer, I can smell him. And he's all disheveled, and it's obvious he's not washed. And as he's closer, I'm thinking, he's drunk, and he's going to beg me for some money. And sure enough, as you focus, right, it occurs. So he looks at me and says, "Mister, could you loan me a quarter?" And I looked at him, and he was so beat up looking. I felt such compassion for him, and I thought, God, I'm going to give him some money. But another part of me said, I don't want to reward this behavior. But then another part of me said, yeah, but I don't want him to suffer. So I thought for a second. I said, well, is that all you want, is a quarter? He looked at me and went, yeah, just one quarter. One quarter changed my whole life. One quarter, one quarter. I said, are you sure? He goes, yep, one quarter. So I reached in my pocket, and I pulled out my money clip, which in those days, I had been poor before, so I always carried a big money clip, and I always had $100 bills on the outside, so I felt rich. Right? So I pulled this thing out, and I made sure he saw it. And I was fuddling through it, trying to find some change caught up between the bills. Right? And he's looking at the bills. He looks at me, looking at the bills, and then finally, I found a quarter, pulled it out, looked at the bills, he looked at them, put it in my pocket, took the quarter, and as I started to move towards him, I saw him look at my pocket. And I said to him as I handed him the quarter, life will pay any price you ask of it. And I'll never forget. He stood there and he stared at me. And then he looked at my pocket. Then he looked at the quarter. Then he stared at me. Looked at the quarter. Looked at my pocket. Looked at me again. Looked at the quarter. Looked at my pocket. Third time he looked at me, he went, you're weird. And he stumbled on off. And that was it. And as I watched him wander on out, I thought to myself, what's the difference between him and me? We live in the same country. You know, we both, I'm sure, experienced massive pain and disappointment and hurt and injustice. But he's 60 years old living in the street begging for quarters, and I get to live the way I get to live. And I thought, well, maybe it's because I'm blessed because I'm such a good person. That's a real elitist belief system. That's garbage. And I thought, you know what the difference is? The difference is what I told him. I believe life would pay any price I asked of it, if I asked intelligently. And asking intelligently doesn't mean you go and beg. In the Bible, it's got an amazing formula. It says, ask and you shall. It didn't say whine and you will receive. And I know it didn't say ask intelligently, but I'm sure that's what God meant. I'm sure he didn't mean complain until you succeed. And I don't think that's what it was. I think what it is in order to ask intelligently, you have to demonstrate you mean it. And the way you demonstrate you mean it is you demand more from yourself. You don't just try and get something from somebody else. You try to give at a level that makes you deserving of receiving. And that giving is when you hold yourself to that standard. I got a question for you. What's the difference between a Mother Teresa, God rest her soul, a Nelson Mandela, a Bill Gates, an Oprah Winfrey, a Michael Jordan, and the rest of the world? Well, they're all leaders, right? Isn't that true? Mother Teresa, here's this little woman this tall who had no money, didn't know how to use a computer in the computer age, and yet when she died, every major leader of the world was there at her funeral. 250,000 people came down to watch her casket go by. People all over the earth mourned the loss of one of the world's great souls. She had no traditional education, but she had a heart. And she had a standard for herself that no one has matched in that area. She swore that as long as she lived, no one within the range of her influence would ever die again without dignity and love. She went into leper colonies in a country where those people are considered a different caste and you didn't even communicate with them. And therefore, she was beloved. What separates those who are the best on earth and others is not skill, it is not an ability. It is a psychology of standards. It is that they are unreasonable people. They have unreasonable demands they make on themselves. I don't believe in this whole thing of don't sweat the small stuff, I got to tell you. I'm sure the person who wrote that, I'm respectful, and I've even used that phrase. I think it's appropriate when you start making yourself frustrated over stupid things, but some people taking that to, it's all small stuff. And I got news for you. No, it's not. If your whole life's small stuff, then why are you here? Your children are small stuff. Love is small stuff. Your spiritual beliefs are small stuff. Your capacity to build a business is small stuff. I don't think so. But if that's what you adopt as a way to just escape frustration, then what you create for yourself is a life of no significance and no meaning. And that's how most people live. Most people live in a place I call no man's land, where they're not really happy, but they're not unhappy enough to do anything about it. The people that govern the world are not reasonable people. Reasonable people go, come on, get real. You can't do that. No one's going to believe in that. No one's going to do that. No one's going to listen to that. Give me a break. Stop this stupid thinking. That's been told to everybody from Edison to Einstein, from Bezos, right, to Gates. Anyone who's had an idea, they've all been seen as crazy. But see, what's unbelievable about them is they weren't reasonable, because the reasonable person is always adapting to the world so they'll fit in. The unreasonable person adapts the world to themselves by adding value. And the way they do it is not by demanding from society, but by delivering and demanding of themselves. If you ask me, I've had the privilege of coaching some unbelievable people, many of which became very good friends, some of which have passed away, Princess Diana, Mother Teresa being two of them. But of all the people I met, it'd be hard between Mother Teresa, but all the living people I've met and had a chance to work with, Nelson Mandela is the most amazing human being I've ever met. Can you imagine someone taking 27 years of your life away from you and imprisoning you falsely, and you coming out and saying, hey, no problem. Let's work together. Let's make the country great. Can you imagine that? That's what human beings are capable of. But most of us never touch our capability because we're not unreasonable. It'd be very reasonable for him to come out and want to kill every white person in sight. But instead he said, let's find a way. In fact, why don't you help me govern the country, de Klerk? Let's do it together. That's what a human being is capable of when they raise their standard and when they're unreasonable. But to do that, you got to get hungry. Because as long as you're no man's land, what you're really doing is making yourself feel comfortable. You get a little stressed, smoke a cigarette. Get a little stressed, eat something. Get a little stressed, turn on CNN. Get a little stressed, go to a movie. Get a little stressed, do something. Because what that does is allow you to escape the stress. And the stress is drive when you convert it. If you have no stress, think about it. You're bored. You want to have eustress instead of distress. Eustress means there's something you want so much that you've got enough drive to make it happen. There's that place inside you, and it only shows up when you get hungry again. And I'll tell you what will get you hungry. When you get around people that are hungry, when you get around people that won't settle, it'll start to affect you. Because you'll start to look around and go, man, that's how life can be. But if you hang around with people who have low standards, you'll be there too. And maybe it's not low compared to who you hang out with. It never looks like it's low. In fact, who do people hang out with? People at their same level or below, so they feel good about themselves. How do you really get good at tennis, let's say? You play somebody better than you are. You play somebody at your skill or below, you're not going to get any better. Let me tell you this right now. If you left now and there's only one thing you remembered, I want you to remember this. Pick your friends carefully, because who you spend time with is who you become. Who you spend time with is who you become. Those boys that went and blew up the school had the wrong group of friends, that's for sure. Because they reinforce each other at the worst level. And the people that succeed in my own life, I've been blessed. I've sought out people who have unbelievably high standards and put myself in an environment where I couldn't turn back. Because people all get what they must have. I would say to you, my friends, that right now you're earning exactly what you must earn. Not what you want to earn. Not what you like to earn. Not what your goals are. You're getting your musts. You're getting your standards. Your relationship right now is as intimate as it must be, or you're leaving it. That's it. This is your only must. People always get their must. So when I say you want to change your life, I'll tell you in one sentence, raise your standards. I know that sounds stupid and boring, but it's the truth. That's it. I asked Jordan the very first time I got to work with him. I said, tell me, Michael, what has made you better than anybody else on earth in this game? Is it skill? Is it ability? Is it God-given talent? What is it? And he looked at me and said, Tony, he said, I appreciate the compliment. He said, I think I can tell you the truth and you're not going to question it. I'm not saying I don't have a ton of skill. I do. He said, but it is all, every bit of it is standards. He said, every day I demand more from myself than anybody can expect of me. I don't compete with anyone but my ultimate ability, and I don't wait for someone else to raise my standard. When I walk on that court, my standard is I own it. And he said, I didn't have the skill in the beginning. He said, I got cut from my high school basketball team. I didn't make it my sophomore year. Coach cut me, said, kid, you got lots of skill. You got no heart. You got no standards. You're relying on your skills, and skill is not enough. You're out of here. He begged him to be on the team. The coach said, I'll tell you what. If you come every morning and work out with me, 6:30 a.m. before school for this year, I promise you you'll be the most skilled player, but more importantly, you're the most disciplined player, and I'll guarantee you a spot on the team, but more importantly, I guarantee you you'll be a star. Michael did that. Most people don't know. Hunger. Michael became a megastar when he lost to Detroit for the third time. And he was crying on the bus. He told me he's sitting there crying because he felt like they stole his pride, Detroit Pistons. Again, they hadn't made it. He was mad at everybody else, saying they didn't give enough heart. And he said, you know what? I will never, never go home like this again without the trophy. Never. That day, he said, this summer, I'm going to lift weights. I'm going to dash out with more power than I've ever had in my life. And we all know the story of that. Three in a row, leave, three in a row. I mean, very few people in sports history have done that. It's standards. That's it. So here's what I mean by standards. First key to change your life, raise your standards. Here's what it means. Turn your shoulds into musts. Because everybody's got a list of shoulds, don't they? You know, I should lose weight. I should go on a diet. I should spend more time with my kids. I should be more loving. I should make more phone calls. I should. People don't actually change anything. They just what I call should all over themselves. You don't want to shit all over yourself, right? You want to create results. And those results come when you raise your standard. You got to turn the shoulds into musts. So let me tell you the secret to life. I know the answer. Here it is. Are you listening? Are you listening? Are you listening up there? Are you listening over there? How about you people straight all the way in the back? Fantastic. Here is the secret to life. I told you it's standards, right? But let me tell you which standard will give you all the rewards. Think of it this way, metaphorically. When you do a poor job at something in life, what kind of rewards do you get for doing a poor job? I used to believe that if you did a poor job, you got poor rewards. That's not how it works. Today, in this society, if you do a poor job, you get pain. You get outsized, right-sized, downsized, fired, right? Unless you work for the government, you do a poor job, they usually give you a raise and move you up. But everywhere else but the government, when you do a poor job, you get pain. You do a poor job with your kids, they end up in jail. Now, you do a poor job in a relationship, you get left. That's how it works. So think of poor as a standard, if I was going to do it visually, as being way down here. Now, nobody in this room would settle for a poor in their life because you wouldn't part with a day of your life and your time and your energy and your money and your focus if you're willing to settle for poor. I know that. So if this is poor, it's a huge jump to the next level of life called good. Now, when you do a good job in life, what kind of rewards do you get? Good. I used to think that too. It's not true. When you do a good job in life, you get poor rewards. In fact, this frustrates people all the time because most of us are taught growing up, be a good person and everything will turn out great. I'll give you an example. I got these silly infomercials. How many have seen these things through the years? Say aye. They're kind of hard to miss, aren't they? And people are funny because when they see you on TV, even though it's a silly infomercial, they treat you like a celebrity. Like, oh my God, hey, it's Tony Robbins. Hey man, I watch your show every Thursday. They go, it's a commercial. Have you noticed the guests don't change? Some people are a little slow on that. But what happens is people either do one of two things. They either tell me an incredible story about how their life has changed through my work, which is the greatest gift of my life, but the other thing they do is sometimes they ask me a question. The one that breaks my heart is somebody will come to me and they'll say, Mr. Robbins, they'll be really sincere, not somebody just messing around. And they'll say, you know, can I ask you a question? And I said, sure. They say, I know you deal with a lot of people. I'm curious. Can you tell me? And they get teary-eyed or emotional and they'll say something like, I'm really a good man. How come my wife left me? I'm really a good woman. How come my husband left me? Or I'm really a good parent. I love my kid. How come he's on cocaine? Or I'm really a good worker. How come they laid me off? And it's heartbreaking because I know the answer, but to tell them the answer would sound flippant. It's because you're good. Because when you do a good job, you get poor rewards. So I don't usually tell people that, but it's the truth. And you know what? You may say, that sounds horrible. The best study of life is how it is, not how you wish it should be. You know, I don't like gravity. I'm just going to step right off here. Well, that's fine. If you don't like it, it's still, you're going to have to live it, right? And so good is not the goal you want. So if this is poor way down here and it's a giant jump to good, then it is a huge jump to the level achievers go for. All of you in this room would never settle for good, right? All of you achievers in this room, you're out there trying to make it happen at the next level. You're all going for excellence. How many of you are committed to excellence? Say I. And when you are really excellent at something, what kind of rewards do you get? Good. How many have ever done this? How many have ever really achieved a goal? I mean, you worked hard and you really, really achieved an excellent goal, and afterwards you felt like, is this all there is? How many of you have ever had that experience? Say I. You know why? Because you were excellent. You know, I wasn't just good, I was excellent. I was one of the very best. I did this, I did that. You work so hard. You're not just good, you're way up there. But you get mediocre good reward. That's how it really is. You go, well, how many levels are there? There's only one more level. If this is poor, giant jump to good, huge jump to excellence, all the rewards are only a quarter inch above excellence. All of them. They're for the people that don't give up and don't settle for excellence. It's just a little bit higher, and it's a level called outstanding. When you are outstanding, when you stand out from all the rest, you get all the rewards, all of them. And it's totally unfair, and I love it. It's totally unfair. Let me tell you why I love it, because it's like life. Life is unfair, isn't it? Now, why would we as a culture, and it's not just us as a culture, it's around the world, why have we set up the system where we reward people who are outstanding massively disproportionately to achievers who are excellent? I mean, think about it. You know, you look at a sports star who makes $100 million for a couple of years, 3, 4, 5 years, and a school teacher makes $38,000 a year. But you know what's interesting? Whether they use it properly or not doesn't matter. That person has more influence because they generate more people's jobs, opportunities, and behaviors. More people were employed by Michael Jordan in Chicago than almost any single person because of what he brought to that city. So he was worth it. Fortunately, in Michael's case, he used his influence in a positive way for most of society. He really wanted to serve and worked to make a difference as well, not just go off and take care of himself. So he was one of those unique heroes that really did both. But he was outstanding, and he was rewarded disproportionately to anybody else. You know what's interesting? The difference between outstanding and excellent is just a tiny thing. In a horse race, it's a millisecond. The winner of the horse race gets everything. Number two gets a little. Number three gets nothing. Or better yet, the Olympics. How many of you, first of all, how do you get to the Olympics? Can you get to the Olympics by being good, yes or no? No way. Can you get to the Olympics by being excellent? You cannot get to the Olympics by being excellent. You got to be totally what? Outstanding is the only way you get there. And if you get the Olympics and you're totally outstanding, you stand out from all the rest, 6 billion people on the planet take 2 weeks to watch you and marvel. Because everyone wants that, because everybody has that somewhere, and seeing it in someone else tends to stimulate it. The reason we as a worldwide culture reward people at an outstanding level disproportionate is we want to get as many people there as we can, because when they get there, they raise the standard for the rest of us. Think about it. Edison, corny example. Why aren't we smelling smoke right now? Because we got lights. Where do those lights come from? Somebody who was so outstanding. He had to go through all the frustration, all the rejection, all the things that usually stop people. 10,000 experiments before he finally created the incandescent bulb. And now we have the benefit. Because he was outstanding, we all benefit. Every 4 years in the Olympics, we think human beings have run the fastest they can run, jumped the highest they can jump, thrown the furthest they can throw, and every 4 years they do more. How is that humanly possible? Remember when a 4-minute mile was impossible 4,000 years? All that was changed is one man raised his what? Standard. He didn't make it a should, he made it a total what? And he changed his beliefs. And the way he did that was by rehearsing it in his head so many times till he believed it. Here's what's interesting. Within 3 years of his running that 4-minute mile, 31 other people ran a 4-minute mile. We could always do it. We just needed somebody outstanding to lead the pace and show us what's possible. And by the way, what are the rewards for those outstanding people? Think about it. Did you see the opening to the Olympics in Atlanta? How many saw it at least on television? Say I. Did you see the guy that came out who was like 87 years old? He's the oldest living gold medalist. And what is this guy? He walks out on the field and he gets a standing ovation from 100,000 people. The president cried. Why are they applauding this man? They don't even know who he is. But they're emotional. You know why? Because they know he was outstanding 75 years ago. That's pretty amazing. Think about it. Even amongst the outstanding, some are more outstanding than others. 10 people in a race in the Olympics. One person takes first place. They stand out by a hair, by a millisecond, just by the tiniest amount. Are they rewarded equally to the other people? No way. What do we give the person who stands out in first place? What do we give them? Quick. The gold. What else do we give them? Endorsements. No. We do give endorsements. We make them a hero for life, something you cannot buy with any amount of money. Bill Gates can't be a hero unless he earns it. Doesn't matter how much money he has. You got to be a hero. And to be a hero, you got to do something that's so unselfish and outstanding, or be so outstanding in what you give. And that's what these people get. What do we give the second person, by the way? Silver. What do we give the third person? What do we give the fourth person? Nothing. Nada. Squat. And check this out. They're the fourth fastest human on earth. And they get nothing. Except the memory they were there. That's a little scary, isn't it? You go, this society is brutal. But let me tell you the good news. Life is not the Olympics. Life is not sports. In sports, only one person can win. Can everybody here in this room win? Yes or no? Yes. Can everybody here be an outstanding parent? Yes or no? Yes. Can everybody here be an outstanding friend? Yes. An outstanding lover? Yes. You better believe it, baby. Okay? Can you be outstanding? Can we all in business be outstanding and do unbelievably well and push the economy to another level? Yes or no? Absolutely we can. There is no limit in real life. It's not a sport. Now let me tell you, you say, but I don't know if I have the skill to be outstanding. Outstanding is almost never skill. There are plenty of people with so much skill and they can't fight their way to have a paper bag. It's standards, my friends. It's standards. I give you a good example. Carrie Strug. Do you remember? How many saw Carrie Strug at the Olympics? Come on. So here's this little girl. What happens? It was like a movie, wasn't it? The Americans are finally going to beat the Russians. We haven't beat them even when the USSR, we always got beat. And so there's frustration. We're finally going to win. And then what happens? Right on the verge of winning, she does it right to her ankle. And the announcer is an American guy, and he doesn't even hide his disappointment. Oh, my God. He goes berserk. I can't even believe it. Once again, the Americans have managed to sabotage. Once again, the Russians are going to beat us. He just starts to lose it. And the other guy's going, looking at her, and his big comment is, that's got to hurt, Bob. That must be why you get the big bucks for comments like, that's got to hurt. Right? So, you know, and they're talking depressed, and they're beating up the Americans, and later, it's like a Rocky movie. It's like somebody rang that bell. You know, ding, ding, and Rocky gets out of bed, right? And they go, it's like, what is it? Bob, look over there. I think she's trying to get up. Oh, no way. There's no way. I really think she's going to. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I think she's going to do it. And she gets up there, right? And you could just feel it, couldn't you? Tingles in the back of your neck. You watch this little girl grimace and get up there and with total heart and soul somehow get herself up there. And you go, she's walking like this. She can't run and vault, right? And she gets in there and all of a sudden you watch her go into state, didn't you? Boom. And she somehow went bam, 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 boom, came down, wham, like this, and then went, and pulled her leg up, right? Remember that? And in that second, everybody watching knew she'd won. And you felt chills. How many of you were moved emotionally? How many of you cried? Come on, raise your hand. I know. Come on, some of you guys cried. Come on, raise your hand. I know you did. How many of you were moved emotionally, honestly? Say I. Why were you moved? Why did you cry? Why did you get those tingles? I'll tell you what. Because you recognize the part of yourself in that moment. You recognize it wasn't skill, it was heart. It was somebody who held himself to a higher standard than anybody else would ever expect of her. You saw a person become a hero in a moment, a defining moment of that young girl's life. She'll be a hero for the rest of her life. Because she stepped up. She didn't sit down. She stepped up to the challenge. She didn't pull back because of her pain or because of her fear. She gave her all, knowing she could easily fail. But the real failure would be not to try. And you know that. And if you cried or if you have that emotion inside of you, it's because a part of you knows you are not stepping up completely. There's a part of you that's outstanding, that is not being fully embodied. You say, oh yeah, but I'm nothing special. That's a slap in the face of your creator. Because there's nothing like you that's ever been created. There's nothing on earth that doesn't have a purpose. Nothing. Including you and I. And maybe yours is to create a special garden, or raise a special child, or care for a special friend, or write a special song, or hug somebody in a special way. But life is not worth living if it doesn't have meaning, and it doesn't have meaning unless you give your all. And today's a chance for you to decide how you want to live. Because whatever reason you thought you came here for, I'd be willing to bet there's another reason why you're here. It's all about standards. It's all about decisions. And if you decide to play at a different level when you leave here, it won't be because of some stupid Tony Robbins guy or 50 other speakers. It's because you were drawn to an environment in which it was time for you to call yourself to the next level so you could have the fulfillment and pride that comes from giving your all. Because people talk so much about self-esteem these days, I can't stand it. Oh, I don't have any self-esteem because my mother always did. So did mine. I just didn't listen. You didn't listen to them most of the time. I mean, think about it. I'll tell you where self-esteem comes from. Having esteem for yourself only occurs when you put yourself on the line and you do something that's incredibly difficult on a regular basis. That's where pride comes from. Not ego, pride, something that's earned. And I have so many people who say they have no self-esteem, it's because they never make themselves do anything. Because we lie to ourselves. You know how you kill your hunger? Lie to yourself. Say, well, I'm a little bit robust. No, you're fat. I used to say that. I used to go, I'm big boned. Big boned? My butt was bigger than Chicago. That's what I was. But when you lie to yourself, when you don't tell yourself the truth, you have no hunger to change it. And I got to tell you something. Discomfort is your friend. Because discomfort may move you to actually go for the life you deserve. And a life that is successful but is not fulfilled is not a life you want. So if you came here and you're already inspired, then I'm just here to remind you that there is another level for you. If you came here uninspired, then I'm here to remind you there's another level for you. Because you deserve better. I'm not one of those people who says, I wish I could heal your inner child. Like that Eagle song. Have you heard that Eagle song? Great song, right? Stop your whining and step up. Because you know why I say that? Not out of disrespect. Because I'm only saying this because I've had to do it to myself so many times. I'm not doing it like I'm better than you. I'm just some guy, but I care. And I know you do too, or you wouldn't be here. So now it's your time to have a defining moment or not. The truth is, even if you don't have a defining moment, that's one too. Because when will somebody have another conversation like this with you? How often will someone be totally sincere and not be doing it to try to get you to do something for them, but to get you to do it for you? How often will you have that kind of conversation in your life? Conversation doesn't change lives, decisions do. If you decide, you can have what you want. Well, as you've heard, the difference between those who achieve at the highest level and those who are the most fulfilled versus those who have reasons why they're not is the difference in standards. And if you're willing to commit to be totally outstanding, then you've really got to get yourself to turn those shoulds into musts. And as I've already said in this talk, everybody's got a list of shoulds. I should go on a diet. I should spend more time with my kids. I should follow through on that business idea. But most people don't follow through. They just should all over themselves. And we want to stop that right now. So here's your assignment. Very simple to get momentum going. Very often what I do in a live seminar is I'll take out a book and I'll put it in somebody's hand and I'll say, now I want you to let go of this book when I tell you now and it shouldn't hit your legs. And invariably I say, let go, and it hits their legs. Then I take out a giant squirt gun and I put it at the guy or lady's head and I say, now, when I say let go, if this hits your legs, I'm going to blow your brains out. Let go. And invariably, they find a multitude of other ways to make certain that this doesn't hit their legs. And I can do it 5 or 6 times and take away all their options, and they still go figure out how to not have it hit their legs. And the reason is because it's a must. So the secret to life is having higher standards than anyone else, turning your shoulds into musts. So here's your assignment out of this quick power talk. One, make a list of 2 things that have been shoulds for you that are negatively affecting your life because you're not following through. Pick one from your business life and one from your personal life. Maybe one of those is in your personal life, for example, is you know it's a should not to lose your temper with your children, but you do because you get overwhelmed by your work assignments and the challenges, et cetera, and then you feel bad about it afterwards. You've got to make that a value within you that is a must never for you. So what you got to write down is, what is this thing you're going to change from a should to a must? That's number one. And number two, why must you change this now? Why will you never go there again? What kind of person would continually do that with their own children? And write it in a way that is so powerful and potent that if you were to read it, you would never allow yourself to go there. Then the third step is, once you've figured out what it is you're going to turn from a should to a must in your personal life and in your professional life, one for each. Secondly, once you describe why this must and will change now, the third step is, what two actions are you going to take immediately that will commit you to following through on this commitment, that'll make it a must? So for example, maybe one is a small action, an action like, you're now going to publish this commitment of yours in the house, framed for all your kids to read and for your wife or husband, everyone else to see that this is how you're going to live. And to violate this means you would be this kind of person. This is known as leverage. Some people can walk by and say, what's this mean? Is this who you really are? If you put that kind of leverage in, you're going to follow through, and it's not going to be a should anymore. It's going to be a must for you, because you know this is your standard and you've committed to everyone. If there was an action like you wanted to stop overeating, maybe one of those action steps is, you're going to write down that tonight when you go home, you're not going to talk about going on a diet. You're going to go through the entire house and you're going to rip out everything out of your refrigerators, your freezers, out of your cupboards that you know cannot be a part of your diet, that it's just crazy and insane and having it there is just tempting you. And you're going to take all this food and flush it down the toilet while you stand above the commode in a peak state, playing the music of We Are the Champions of the World. I don't know, whatever it takes to commit an act that gets you to follow through and turns the should into a must by changing the environment in which you're living or the commitment you're making, not just to yourself, but to others, so that you follow through. So I did this really fast. Here are the three steps. What have been shoulds in your personal life? What's a should in your professional life that must change now? And by doing it, it'll change your life for the better. Two, why is it a must for you to change? What would it destroy if you don't change it? What will you gain by changing it? Three, what are one or two actions you can take immediately, a little step and a big action that would commit you so that you will follow through and turn the should into a must and thereby gain the benefit that you deserve, living a life that's not good, not excellent, but totally outstanding. That's your assignment for this Power Talk. Congratulations on adding another set of distinctions to your life and taking some more action to hold yourself to a higher standard and get the rewards that life offers those people that live at that level. Oh, by the way, before I go, I want to mention one other thing. And that is, this month's Power Talk interview is with Jay Abraham. Now, if you own a business, I don't care if you're a little entrepreneur, you own a business, or you work for someone else, and you want to say, what can give you certainty you will do well long-term financially? You want to learn one skill? It's marketing. Because in business, the area that you can put the least amount of money in and get the greatest return of any area of your business is marketing. With the right change in marketing, you can make your economic return be 10,000%. 10,000% greater with not $1 being spent more, just by using the right changes and what you use to hook people and show them that your product is unique and different. The best marketing man I know in this country who makes it simple, usable, applicable is Jay Abraham. And so I did an interview with him that lasted 3.5 hours. We had to condense it down to 2 hours for you. So this is a jam-packed Power Talk. This should be the equivalent of 3 or 4 of them. So you better feel the added value. The truth of the matter, because I worked hard at this, and if you don't appreciate it, I'm going to come find you. Seriously, take the time to listen to this, because you may not have heard of Jay before, but when you're done listening, you'll understand this man's brilliance. He is a genius in this area. And our book summary this month, by the way, is a phenomenal book called Jack Straight from the Gut. It's by Jack Welch, who of course is the CEO, or I should say the past CEO of GE for 20 years. It's interesting. He started as an engineer earning only $10,500 a year, and he built this company into a market capitalization of more than $450 billion. In one of the most admired businesses in the world. He's certainly one of the most respected leaders in the business world. So this is his biography, and it really gives you a background on what has shaped his business career. So again, we've got a great book summary for you to take the very best out of this book. But as always, this is a book you want to take the time to probably come back and digest and take in. It's a book you can read many times and make distinctions for your own business as well. So enjoy. I'll look forward to talking to you again next month. Till then, keep living with passion. God bless, and I'll talk to you then.